Welcome to episode 2 of the AVOD. As ever, I'm Count Vargelon.
And I am the Dive Mistress.
Today, we've got a whole lot of stuff to talk about, so we're going to start off with a little thing called Midnight Meat Train, which one of us got to see, and the other one is very jealous about.
Yes, I did get to see Midnight Meat Train.
Explain the circumstances of that, please.
Okay. Well,
and by the way, the word is circumstances. Not circumstances, as I just said.
I didn't even catch that.
Well, I'm proud of my ability to use words today.
You should be.
Thank you.
You should be.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, moving right along. I got to see Midnight Meat Train because where I live, we have a great big, huge TV. And this wonderful cable package that has on demand, and we have access to free movies. In particular, Fearnet is my new favorite.
Just for people who don't know, I don't know. So.
Oh, Fearnet, they just show horror movies.
Oh, so it's like the American Scream channel.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You've forgotten about the existence of Scream already, been out of Canada so long?
Okay.
That's fair.
Anyway.
It's a bad channel.
Oh, poor Scream.
I know. Now it's sad.
Sad.
Okay, you're watching Fearnet.
Yeah, I was... Well, no, okay. Back up. I was watching just regular TV, and I saw this ad, and it was an ad for Midnight Meat Train, and I got really, really excited, and then, like, oh, it's showing exclusively on Fearnet on demand. And I said to my roommate, I'm like, oh, do we get Fearnet on demand? He's like, why? I'm like, because I want to watch this movie. My roommate said we did. And I waited till everybody was out of the house, and I sat down in front of the big panel TV, and I watched Midnight Meat Train with an introduction by Clive Barker.
Wow.
Saying, this is an exclusive showing of Midnight Meat Train on Fearnet. Aren't you lucky that you get to see it?
I love Clive Barker.
I know, it was amazing. Although
he's so much fun.
I mean, I've seen him speak, and he didn't seem to be all that animated when he was giving this introduction.
Oh, okay. I think he's still pissed off about the theatrical release.
Probably. I would be, too.
Because they really got screwed over on that one. It was in, like, two theaters.
In Russia.
No, beyond Russia. It played in two theaters in America. This is not totally off topic, but I just want to tell my favorite on-demand story. So, got digital cable, right? And so, with the digital cable came for free 2 months of on-demand movies. So, whatever movie you wanted to watch, on-demand, whatever. Okay? That's the great part. So, when you can watch any movie from the on-demand menu, whenever you want, just by clicking a button, you stop getting in any way discerning.
I haven't reached that point yet.
You haven't? Okay. Well, I had a lot of free time on my hand. Okay. But anyway, so I watched a little movie called You Got Served.
Oh, no, you didn't.
That was, I swear to God, the funniest. Like, it is exactly as bad as you think it is, but even better than it's bad. Like, its badness is wonderful. Don't get me wrong. It's wonderfully bad. But beyond its badness, it is not a real film by any definition of the word film. Like, halfway the... Half the movie is this weird thing about, you know, this one of the kid has to keep his, I don't know, sister in school or something by delivering drugs for a mob boss. But then clearly the film, like, went on a hiatus and they weren't able to finish it. And then when they came back, they weren't able to get the drug boss actor back. Right? They weren't able to get the drug boss actor back, so here's how the drug boss, he lost a package of drugs and now owes something like $20,000 to a drug dealer. A murderous drug dealer plot is resolved. They turn to, at the big competition, Steve Harvey, you know, comedian Steve Harvey, one of the original Kings of Comedy and star of the Steve Harvey Show, who played their mentor in the world of dance competitions. Right? He's like, someone says to him, what about that drug dealer that he owes all the money to is going to kill him? Oh, I took care of that.
just like that.
Exactly like that. Totally off camera. It's never mentioned again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And the weird part is, I'll give them this. It was exactly as bad as a movie called You Got Served you would expect it to be. And how many movies can you say that when you watch it, you get exactly what you were hoping for? Not enough.
Not nearly enough.
Not nearly. Okay, now please, back to Midnight Meat Train.
Oh, right. Yeah, so, I got to watch Midnight Meat Train.
And?
And, well, here's the thing.
I'm glad there is a thing.
I really, really, really wanted to love this movie.
Well, you love Clive Barker. I know that.
Because I do love Clive Barker. And Midnight Meat Train, one of my favorite stories.
Like, see, I haven't
just
read the story.
Like, Clive Barker story, but, like, just one of my favorite
stories. Short stories ever.
Yeah, because, well, you know, my parents sort of always indulged, I guess, my dark side. And I have Books of Blood.
Oh,
and I remember,
okay.
Yeah, I remember reading Midnight Meat Train thinking, oh, my God, this is amazing. And then when I heard that they were making the movie, I thought, oh, my God, this is amazing. And never actually bothered to dig out my book and read the story again. I wanted to
preserve it, yeah.
Preserve it. Well, also just sort of revel in this sort of nostalgic, you know, feeling of joy and amazement, I guess, at, you know, how bloody and disgusting the story was.
It really is
so
that awful.
So not getting caught up in the details, just sort of knowing and remembering that it was about this guy who gets, you know, on the last train, and there's somebody on the train who's, like, murdered everybody and has hung them upside down and shaved them and taken out all their teeth, and then, yeah.
And that's, who's that in the movie?
Which, who? The
guy murderer.
On the train?
That's Vinnie Jones, right?
Vinnie
in the movie?
Jones, I know, and that's amazing, because I love Vinnie Jones.
Yeah.
So I watched the movie, and it is good. Like, it's cringe-inducing.
Yeah.
It's got some good, gory moments. Vinnie Jones is awesome, of course.
But?
He doesn't say anything. He's silent for the whole
movie.
Oh,
that's fantastic.
But there's
a pretty big but here.
There's a but. I mean, it looks amazing.
Yeah.
It does. It's wonderful to look at. And I liked sort of the pacing of it. And I don't know, I might just be talking crap now.
Okay, which happens sometimes.
It's made by a Japanese director, and Japanese movies are paced a lot differently than North American movies.
Oh, no, completely.
So it's got like a real kind of slow, brooding build-up to the main event.
But oh, so the whole train ride doesn't happen, like, right at the outset of the movie?
Well, no, because this is a thing. Also, because it's a North American script, there's certain, I don't know, kind of North American
changes that had to be made.
Standards that need to be met, okay. I guess. The main character, he has to start obsessing, and it takes over his life, and he can't do anything else but sort of solve this mystery of what's going on this train at 2:00 in the morning.
Oh, okay.
And I felt like that, you know, it seemed just really forced to me. And then, you know, his girlfriend and his best friend get involved, and it goes very badly for them.
As you'd expect it would.
Like, you know, it wasn't really necessary to begin with, like,
so you're saying they were overcomplicating, like, a really pure, beautiful plot.
Well, it wasn't even that complicated. It just sort of seemed like they were really forcing the point that this guy was really obsessing about, you know, what was happening on his train.
Okay.
And it was really driving him crazy to the point where he was, like, it was ruining his relationship and ruining his life. And I don't know why they felt they kind of needed to go that way. I mean, maybe it happens.
So none of that's in the short story.
Well, the thing is, I don't really remember.
Oh, okay.
But also,
do you remember loving the short story?
It's a short story.
And with Clive Barker, you know what?
Take place over,
honestly,
like, one night.
Clive Barker, I wouldn't be surprised if the story was just, here's some screwed up stuff that happens on a train. And
that's
the whole story.
I think the story is only like one night. Where the guy, he's like, gets on the last train and falls asleep, and when he wakes up, everyone who was on the train with him is now dead.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, what just happened? Whereas the movie takes place over, I think, a period of at least a month.
Oh. So yeah, he, like, witnesses the thing and then investigates the thing.
Well, yeah, because he gets on the... He's a photographer, and he's given this opportunity to show his work in this really exclusive gallery.
Right.
But he's got to really impress the gallery owner. So he goes out really late at night, and he photographs his girl being accosted by these street thugs.
Okay.
And so he takes pictures of the whole thing and then sort of faces off with the gang members, and they leave him alone. And then she gets on the train. And the following day, there's a story in the newspaper how this model has disappeared. And he realizes that this is the girl that he saved. And he, took this, he was the last person to ever see her alive.
And he knows that he got on the train, and she got on the train.
Yeah, so he kind of, it sort of takes him all to sort of put two and two together. Meanwhile, he's taken these photographs that he took of the attack and shown them to the gallery owner, and she loves him, and she's like, I've got a show in 3 weeks' time. Bring me more photos like this, and you can be in the show.
More photos of people attacking strangers on the street.
Sort of along those lines.
Okay.
Urban
blight.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, partway through the movie, is the gallery showing. So
right.
You know that 3 weeks have passed. So he's been he's been obsessing over this.
For at least 3 weeks.
For at least 3 weeks. And then it kind of all sort of...
Comes to a head in one big
exactly.
thing. Okay.
Yeah. So it just, I kind of felt like the build-up was really forced, and his sort of descent into insanity was really forced and unnecessary, because I think it sort of loses something. If he were, level-headed throughout and was still able to maintain relationships and, some semblance of a life, while at the same time having this kind of eat away at him on the inside.
Right. Now, based on how you remember it, you feel like this whole investigative aspect doesn't add much.
No, not at all.
You'd rather it just be,
on
a tighter timeline
it's just because he became such a wreck.
Right. So even you could have done the investigation stuff if, it had been handled better.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
But I don't want to say that it's not a bad movie, because it is. Because, I did get really tense watching it. And I was grossed out watching it, which is...
So you still it's an okay movie, but it wasn't what you were expecting,
no,
and there's a lot of
expecting.
Stuff you wish they had done better.
Which maybe is the problem. I know. I had really high expectations because of all the hype.
The weird part is, I've never read the story, so had you not just told me all this, I could have gone in with zero expectations.
I've been the judge.
I know. And now
you've
created all these expectations for me.
Lower the bar.
Let's lower that bar.
That's what I usually do.
Although, to be fair,
I love the crap that I watch most of the time, because I go in with no expectations, and I'm not disappointed.
hearing about the investigation thing and how awkward it is, makes me think about what a hack I am. Because... I know. A while ago, I was trying to figure out a way to do an H.P. Lovecraft story as a feature, right?
Oh, see, that's always...
You know, they're all public domain. It's always sketchy, and it's always going
to
be hard.
It's hard to do. And you know what? I got to say, what I've seen so far...
Yeah. Oh, it's bad.
Good. Although I have yet to watch Call of Cthulhu,
I hear that's good.
Yeah.
So, now, do you mean the one that's the black and white thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that's a really good, if not a great movie, a really good, fake silent film.
Well, that
I heard
was,
they did
a
pretty
real labor
good job.
Of love for those guys.
I think it
took them 15 years or something. Did
really?
I just make that up? I don't know.
I don't think it was 15 years. Probably 5 years.
Okay, whatever.
15 just seems like a lot. I don't know. I'm just saying 15 seems
a Lovecraft movie. Made by and for Lovecraft fans.
Oh, absolutely. Which, we are, so thank you.
I don't, far be it for me to criticize someone
really,
else's
far
work.
Be it for me to criticize? That something that is a problem?
Not a new fan of Stuart Gordon. I got to say.
No.
Although,
he has a lot of problems.
Reanimator is
awesome. Everyone loves a Reanimator. we love it from the opening with its wonderful, Look, here's the theme from Psycho.
Such a good movie.
I love that it's the theme. They're like, no, we just do the theme from Psycho. Nobody will care. Nobody will sue us.
I mean, like, they changed so much of that story, too, because the story's amazing.
It's a really fun story. And like, the weird part is...
the re-imaging.
Yeah.
Was brilliant, also.
You know, actually, Reanimator has my favorite scene, like, one of my favorite lines of dialogue in the entire history of film. Reanimator has killed Dan, his roommate's cat.
Yeah.
But he's pretending that it just died so he can demonstrate the reanimating thing, right? And my favorite line of dialogue ever is that it's like, because Dan had found the dead cat, and he's like, yeah, your cat died. And it's like, well, you know, it's like, it was shocking to find it in the fridge. I mean, why didn't you leave a note? And what would the note have said, Dan? Cat dead, details later? I'm like, that's just my favorite line of dialogue.
That's a good
cat
one.
Dead, details later. I just think it's beautiful. I think it's a beautiful line of dialogue. I someday hope to write a line of dialogue as perfect as that cat is. Dead, details later. No, but, you know, I love Reanimator. I think it's very entertaining, even if though it has nothing to do, basically, with the story.
Except for the little reanimating part.
Except for the fact that he's a guy who reanimates corpses.
Yes.
It has basically nothing to do with the story.
Oh, no, I believe they are medical students in
That's
the story
true.
And in the movie.
Well, no, the story take is a 6-part story that takes place over, like, 30 years. So, yeah, for the first 2 or 3 chapters, they are medical students, but that goes past quickly. And this guy... insanely remains the Dr. Watson to Herbert West's Sherlock Holmes, which I think is pretty funny. I'm not saying Japanese people love Herbert H.P. Lovecraft, but I got the weirdest thing. The weirdest thing happened. So the game, I don't know if you're familiar with, wow, why did you even be? But I don't know if you're familiar with the game Splatterhouse, which is a wonderful game.
It's
basically adjacent, you know, side-scrolling games where you hit stuff. You know, it's a classic genre from Kung Fu on. Anyway, it's a Jason-themed game. You play as a guy who looks like Jason, you run around killing guys, right?
Cool.
Killing zombies. It's fantastic. Like, nothing wrong with that game. Here's the interesting thing. Mad scientist mansion fighting all these zombies. But the twist is, and you only get this if you read the manual, because there's no text in the game, it's West Mansion.
No way.
The idea is that you're in Herbert West's house fighting monsters Herbert West has created.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, apparently, you know, like, whoever made the game in Japan loves it. And, what's even more interesting is... my favorite video game of the past 5 years, Operation Darkness, which is about, you know, I'm sure I've told you about it.
Nazi
vampires. Well, it's also the origin of the name I write, the pseudonym I use for novels, Alexander Vlado. trust
why
me, with the novels I'm putting
huge
out.
To me?
I don't know. It shouldn't be.
No, not at all. You're
as you know,
secrets.
With the novels I put out, I do not want my real name attached to them. But anyway, the point is, this thing was about Nazi vampires battling British werewolves during World War II.
That does sound vaguely familiar.
It's the best thing ever, but... one of the guys on the heroic team is Herbert East Reanimator.
Herbert East?
And so I checked into it, and it turns out that it's such a low-budget game that even though Reanimator is completely public domain, because they were making a movie, there had been a movie, they were afraid of copyright stuff. So even though it's completely public domain, they're like... should we find out if it's not public domain? You know, can we call him a Herbert West Reanimator? And then they realized that doing the legal check to find out how much, you know, whether it was all right to call him Herbert West, would essentially be, like, the cost of making the video game.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, not the cost, but it would be, like, add another 10% to the budget or something ridiculous
really?
Like
just
that.
To figure that. Oh, my God.
Just to go through all of the paperwork to pay a lawyer to spend, like, 50 hours figuring it out would have been a ridiculous expense. So they're like, screw it, let's just call him Herbert East.
God.
Isn't that hilarious?
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I thought that was especially funny. Anyway, but yeah, Herbert West is great. You know, Dagon is not good. His last one,
although,
which I don't even remember the title in, was good.
Dagon does have that one amazing skin.
Oh yeah, the
scene.
Yeah, the skin pulling scene is extremely disgusting. I'll give it that. That was an exceptionally disgusting
that
sequence.
That was good. That was good.
Yeah, I can't deny that. But anyway, the thing I have about his work is, like, I never really feel the Lovecraft. You know, and it's not The Unnameable bad, because The Unnameable is pretty bad. That was the H.P. Lovecraft as slasher movie monster film.
Oh, God. I don't even feel familiar with that one.
Don't, yeah, stay away. Okay. Even though I think, God, I'm trying to remember who was in the sequel. I think John Rhys-Davies was briefly in the sequel, which is kind
of
nice.
He's briefly in a lot of things.
He really is.
I know, I watched Waxwork the other day.
Oh, well, wait, don't tell me about...
What is he doing in this movie?
Don't tell me any more about Waxwork. I'm going to watch it again, and I want it, because it's one of those things that I haven't watched since my childhood, and I want to be surprised and see how it stacks up to my memories. But anyway, to get back to the, oh my God, how did we get so far from this point, I was trying to figure out a way to do Pikmin's model as a feature, right?
Pikmin's model's been made.
It has?
Yeah, sorry.
I swear it has not been made as a feature.
I
it's been done as like...
swear to you. Oh, not a feature.
It has been... No, that's what I'm saying. It's been done as shorts. It's been done as episodes of TV, of like anthology horror TV shows. But it's never been done as a feature, and I was trying to figure out a way to do it as a feature, because I think it's such a compelling idea. But I was, you know, drawing a blank, and I'm like, well, I could have a guy witness something bad happen, and then he could start investigating.
And then he'll go crazy.
And then he'll go crazy trying to find out.
And then the police won't believe him.
And then he'll go end up having to go down to the sewer himself.
And he loses his job.
Exactly.
It writes itself.
It did write itself, which is why I didn't write it. Because it's like everything I did to try and turn it into a feature was the most cliched thing imaginable. And I'm like, seriously? If in minute one of the movie you can plot out the rest of the movie, I'm just not interested in writing that movie.
Well, maybe you should pull a reanimator and re-envision it.
You know what? I still might do that because it's one of my favorite stories.
It's a good one.
It's a really great story, and I feel like,
that
I mean,
so good.
I know. I feel like nobody's ever really done it justice, although I am, and this is a weird side thing, but I'm totally working on a version that's vaguely, I found out the secret to writing a decent Lovecraft screenplay is to go for the style, not the story beats, and I'm writing something that's incredibly loosely based on the Lurking Horror. Is that what I'm... Lurking Horror, is that what it was called?
I don't even know.
Anyway, it's the one where the guy goes back to the town where his family was from and the two eyes. And anyway, point is, I think it could really work. But you know what? I'll tell you more about that when it's done.
Okay.
All right, so the verdict on Midnight Meat Train, is it something that people should, like, is it going to be, you take out the Clive Barker thing, is there enough there for just someone who wants some splatter is going to have a good time?
I'd say so.
Definitely, like, you would just recommend it to anyone who's enjoying some splatter.
Like, it's not blood-soaked.
Right.
Okay, because that, okay. My new baseline.
What is your new baseline?
Against which I rate, you know, all... you know, gory, blood-soaked movies.
Yeah.
Is Rambo 4.
Wasn't Rambo 4 great?
Unbelievable. Oh, my God. I loved it.
And the thing is, yes. A lot of people gave
blood
it a lot of a hard
soaked.
Time.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. And I'm like, it was worth waiting 70 minutes for that last 10 minutes.
But even that, it's just, it is the goriest movie yet made. Well, okay, that's not true.
Oh, God.
Bad Taste is the goriest
movie. Yeah, Bad was technically more gory, but it was pretty close.
But this Rambo 4, goriest movie of the 21st century.
Yeah, that's fair. It was amazing.
Unbelievable. I loved it. So any movie that comes out that claims to be,
the goriest thing.
The goriest thing, or soaked in blood, extremely violent.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to see how it stacks up against Rambo 4, because so far, nothing has reached that level.
Aww.
And I don't know if anything ever will.
But it is a good, Midnight Meat Train, at least it's a good time.
It's a good time. Absolutely. Okay. Everybody should see it.
Well, I'll definitely check it out the second it's out on video. I mean,
it was at the Bluer.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
Well, I already missed it. So thank you for telling me that.
Well, because I was in town so very briefly.
Right.
And
okay.
I wasn't going to be in town when it was playing.
So you didn't bother telling me. That's fair. All right. So, next up, you recently started a new project over at your dive mistress, I believe, Talks About Horror Movies. Is that Zomboks?
It's on Vamborgs.
Oh, it's on Vamborgs, okay.
Yes. It's Dive Mistress Talks About Other Stuff.
Okay. All right, so it's Vamborgs.
Yes,
Vamborgs. Vamborgs, okay. Blogspot.com if you want to check it up, Vamborgs. Okay.
Talk
about your new project.
Okay, I'm calling it Insanity Plea.
Okay.
And the roots of this project go way back. I had this friend of mine who had a friend who had this theory.
So it was a couple times removed.
A couple times removed. Had this theory that John Carpenter went crazy partway through his career.
Okay.
And that you can, in fact, track his descent into madness through his films. And there is a point in one of the movies.
A tipping point.
A tipping point, if you will. And
I will.
You can say that is the moment where the man went crazy.
Wow.
Except, I don't know when that is.
Oh, so you're just going to go through them one by one.
Yeah, well, the plan is I'm going to sit down. I'm going to watch them all in chronological order.
Okay.
To see if I can find that point at which John Carpenter went nuts. And also to see if I go crazy in the process.
It could easily happen. And every week we'll be checking in with you. As we do the AVOD, we will check in with you to see how far you've gotten, and your comments on the movies you found. So this week was Assault on Precinct 13.
Yes. I'd never seen it before. I've seen a number of his films already. But this one I'd never seen before. I did see the remake.
Yeah, but that was just...
But we're not going to talk about that.
No, we're not here to talk about that.
So Assault on Precinct 13, made in 76, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah, not really too sure where to begin with this one. It was surprisingly good for what it was. I mean, bear in mind, it was
very low budget.
And it's a very low budget movie. It's a very early movie for him. And also, I don't do any research or reading prior to sitting down to watch
this. Okay, so you didn't go watch Rio Bravo before watching Assault on Precinct 13, because it's essentially a remake of that.
And I didn't read anything about the movie. I just, I want to go in with a clean slate with no preconceived notions of what the film is about or meant to represent or anything like that.
Okay.
Or what other people, thought about it.
That's fair. I mean, if you're going to go mad, you're going to go mad on your own.
On my own terms.
Okay. That's totally fair.
It was good. I mean, Carpenter's early work has some strange pacing issues.
Such as?
Such as just being a bit slow, and then suddenly, I might be getting ahead of myself, but because I know Halloween, does have the same pacing issue, where quite a bit happens during the daytime, and then a whole lot of nothing happens, and you switch into night, and there's this there's a big change there from daytime activities to nighttime activities. But there's that whole twilight hour that we
where we're just waiting.
Yeah. So it's just, it's weird.
Okay.
It's just sort of, like, I just think it's sort of, I mean, I suppose I could come up with a really good argument about the dichotomy between day and night and the actions that take place and all the rest of it, but...
And how, you know, there are daytime actions and nighttime actions, but at this weird twilight dusk hour, everything goes on hold, is that what you're saying?
Well, something like that, because you actually don't ever get to that. You don't see the twilight hour. You skip.
Really?
From day to night, yeah.
I don't actually remember the film that well. I watched it quite a while ago.
Yeah,
I mean,
you just
I have a sense of the movie, but...
Because it, like, nighttime comes very quickly.
I mean, Halloween I know shot for shot, so I'm sure I'll be more robust in that discussion, but this
but
film, I
so
remember
much.
Really very just little. One scene.
Yeah.
And well, I think we all know what scene that is.
No.
You don't know what scene?
what
is the one standout scene in Assault on Precinct 13?
For me,
yeah.
It was... I don't think this is the one you're talking about, but for me,
probably
the
not.
The big standout scene was when the cops found the missing electrical worker.
Okay, that was definitely not
no,
the big standout
not what
scene.
You were thinking about.
No, it's the scene right at the beginning that people talk about when they talk about the movie.
Oh, that, yeah. That
yeah.
was. I don't want to talk about, I don't want to give anything away.
Oh, you don't want to give anything away? This is going to be weird if we're not giving anything away.
All right, okay, we'll just say it.
Okay, everyone... Fast forward 2 minutes if you don't want to know, five minutes if you don't want to know the most upsetting thing that happens in the movie. Now, but anyway, yeah. Did you were you surprised when a little girl gets blown away?
I couldn't believe the thing is like you can see it coming because
yeah.
she goes back to the ice cream man and he's getting roughed up by the street gang. But it was so shocking that. He actually just kills her like that.
He doesn't really look. He's just little girl there, bang.
Yeah, he just pulls out his gun and shoots her.
Which leads to, that's my favorite part of the film. My favorite shot of the film is what happens right afterwards, right?
Father?
No, the father, he chases the guys down, the guys get out of the car, and the father fires a couple of shots, and one of the gang leaders is killed.
Yeah.
And... the way he falls, it's almost as if he's shocked that this random guy managed to kill him.
Kill him, yeah.
Like, it's the most casual, like, disbelieving fall in the world. He's just, like, slumps over. What happened? How did this guy kill me? It's such a great look. I love that moment. So now we've reached the point where we're no longer talking about the specific thing that happened. We can talk about the aftermath.
Yeah, no, but I do. I remember when that happened in the movie, I was just like...
What?
What did I just witness?
I
couldn't believe
it. It's jaw-dropping.
It really is. It was, yeah. That's the only
and
word for it.
I'm going to say, that scene, this is weird.
You know, and I blogged about this. I said, you know what? That they could never do that today. There's no
not
way.
Only that, but I think that scene, not because of the shock and horror and all that of that scene, right? This is going to sound very convoluted, but please bear with me. That scene is why I prefer the new that version of the film far more than the new version, even though the new version might be has its own share of shocking deaths and its own, you know, it's much more polished film. And hey, who doesn't love Lawrence Fishburne, right?
The new version, the new version is a really different movie.
It is, but what I'm saying most specifically, the thing that I think differentiates the most, and it's why I prefer the new one of the old one to the new one, right? Is that in the new one, there's this doesn't-really-have-to-be-there plot about, oh, look, he's a gang leader, and they're corrupt cops, and the guys on the outside are cops, and it's cops fighting cops, and they're battling corruption because he's going to take down the corrupt cops when he gets taken. It's so... they've made the Napoleon character, who was just randomly in there in the original, into
yeah.
the whole centerpiece of the movie. What I love about the original is the randomness of the act... that kicks off the assault is just so compelling to me because the violent act that kicks it off is so unexpected. And then the fact that the gang members are all there to get one random guy.
See, now this is the thing. I don't
okay.
know. I'm not 100% sure if that is actually what precipitates the assault. Because at the beginning of the film, there's that scene where all these people are gunned down by the police, and then you see the gang leaders sitting around carving up their arms.
Oh, they're definitely getting ready to go to war with the police.
So they're going to war with the police. So you can't, I don't think you can argue that this was in fact what led to the assault taking place that night, that shooting.
Well, no, the thing they were going to war with the police.
Yeah,
at all points.
But it's never made clear that this is that, like, if that...
They're there to get that guy. It's made pretty clear in the film.
Well, the thing is, this is another part about the movie.
Okay.
You actually never know what's going on with, like, what the gang leaders are thinking.
Yeah, because they're such monsters, they never speak.
So all you have to go on is what the people inside the police station are thinking and feeling. And
yeah.
Their reason is that the gang has come to collect their father.
Exactly.
But because you've been treated to this, you know, the 5 minutes at the beginning where you see, you know, the murder, if you want to call it that, by the police of the gang people, and then the gang leaders sitting around planning their attack, you can't really say for sure why, you know, if they were going to attack the police station that night, or they just moved up their agenda because of what happened, like, you don't really know for sure.
Okay.
And I think that's good though. It works in the movie. I like
it.
It
does work in the movie. But what I was going to say was two things. A, even if they had a free form plan to attack the police in some way, the way in which they decide to attack the police is entirely defined by the thing that happens while daylight is going on.
Because I just didn't think that was clear. It's like, okay, this happened.
More than that, though, okay?
And then they go,
I've always felt, and this is a theory that I'm sure I could find out in a book, but I've made no effort to find out. I've always felt that the whole opening with the cops gunning down a bunch of the gang members may have been a shoot later.
That
added afterwards to give them more of a motivation and willingness to attack a police station. I've always felt that I know that I'm going a little farther than a fan normally should when talking about a film here, but I've always felt that if you look at that film, if you take away that opening scene where they're caught, and you just have these gang members going around and threatening an ice cream man, because that's what gang members do, and then doing the thing that's shocking that they do, leading the guy to look for help at the police station. Like, it's a completely... Their motivation is clear, and it's a completely whole movie. I honestly feel that some person somewhere along the line, maybe during production, maybe after, said, is that really enough reason for them to attack a police station? Isn't that a big deal? And so he went back and added, oh, well, they were planning to go with the war with the cops because of this, of the way this happened. And partially for me, it's how cheap that scene, how the scene where they're doing that, where they're going to the car, where they get gunned down, looks so much cheaper than the rest of the film.
Yeah. No, it's hard to follow the action in that scene.
Exactly.
I'll give you that. But at the same time, the assault is so well organized.
It is, but I think that that's
seems like
part of what they were doing to make to... You're absolutely right about it. It seems if it was just a random thing, but I think that's about mythologizing the villains and turning them into these crazy larger-than-life monsters.
Okay, because they have their banner and they deliver the cholo and all the rest of it. So it seems this is something that they've been working on and planning on for some time. And the cholo, it was their blood.
Oh, yeah.
Which takes place, right after the shootout scene.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm not saying my theory holds water. I'm saying...
I
never claimed it was a good theory, but I've always felt like the movie is a more, compact, and that's what I love about it, that this thing happens, this completely random thing happens, and then it brings all hell down to how many people. And I guess I like the randomness of that so much, I'm unwilling to see the focus that had to be there. And I'm reading into stuff that may not be in the film. I totally accept that it might be that I'm making a mistake here, but I'm telling you what my opinion on the film has always been.
Right. Okay.
But overall, now I'm going to ask you the important question that I'll be asking you at the end of each one of these segments.
Yes.
On the John Carpenter crazy-o-meter, how crazy was this movie?
It rates a zero.
So he's not crazy at all. Just
not crazy. Just
a little shocking at one point, but no crazy.
It's no crazy.
Okay, good. See?
Yeah.
This is a good system to use, the crazy-o-meter.
It is. I call it the crazy-o-meter.
I like crazy-o-meter more.
It's my project.
Your project, you get to decide. So, now I'm going to announce that I have my own project that
yes,
I'm working
on. Yes, I'm very curious to know what it is, because okay. You won't tell me.
I know, it's been a secret for a while, because I've been, it's because I had to get a DVD set. And I didn't want to start bragging about a project until I actually had the means to do the project. No, the project is that I've been planning to, for a while... As you know, I have a minor problem with the depiction of profilers in fiction.
Yes, I'm very well aware of that.
The fact that I have issues with the fact that they're essentially magic people who, you know, solve crimes
you
by...
You have nothing but disdain for the profiler.
I have nothing but disdain for the profiling industry as a whole.
Yeah.
But anyway...
Not specifically The Profiler, which was a show...
Oh, no, I have especially, that was the first show
that
really made me hate The Profiler.
Oh, really? I like that show.
Oh, no. and the misconceptions it gives people about serial killers are a whole other article, so I'm not going to go into that in this article. But what I want to address is the fact that I started to notice something the more critical I got about profiling. And now that's not to say... There aren't instances of profiling that I enjoy. If you check the blog recently, I talked about my love of the show Wire in the Blood, which I think is great. And the reason I thought it was great was, unlike every other show about a profiler in history, the main character, Dr. Tony Hill, is not profiling serial killers because he has a tragic past full of tragedy and is screwed up. He's profiling serial killers because he's a good at being a psychologist, and he wants to help catch bad people. Like, he's a quirky guy, don't get me wrong, but he's not, you know, dealing with a tragic past where his loved one was blah, blah, crap. Okay? Like, I'm going to give the example of every other piece of fiction about profilers ever. Okay? Would it be fair to say that that is the plot of every other piece of fiction about profilers ever?
Well, I haven't seen every other piece of fiction of profilers ever.
Using your ability to make broad, sweeping judgments about popular fiction, give me a ruling.
All right. Okay, I rule in your favor.
Thank you. That's all I'm asking for, a little bit of a ruling. But anyway... So what I loved about it, right, was that, you know, he was just a guy who loved to help people and catch murderers. This is great. You know, it's a great show. I really like it. This season ender had a thing that I'm not going to get into. I talked about on the blog and don't have to get into it here because, you know, that's a whole other conversation. But let's just say I had issues with a direction the show is going that is contrary to everything I love about the show up until this point. And that's where I'm going to leave it for today. But anyway, the thing I began to notice as I started watching a lot of stuff about serial killing profilers, I guess for no other reason than to indulge my hatred for them. I mean, why else would I watch them?
Well, yeah.
I do that a lot, though, I'll be honest with you. I watch a lot of stuff because I hate the stuff.
I know.
You do
I get to hear about it.
You do. That's why you're here. Because you'll listen. You're one of the few people who still listen about it, so that's why you're here.
Learn.
You really have not learned for well over a decade. But anyway, the point I was getting at was the thing I found out that I was kind of fascinated by was how few of fiction's profilers, like how few of the shows about profilers, actually use profiling to solve murders.
Really?
Like, I know, it sounds weird, right? But follow me on this one. What I've noticed is most of these shows don't basically use profiling at all. basically, you'll have profilers, you know, which is nothing wrong with profilers, don't get me wrong, except for my hatred of them. But normally, what I've always said about profilers in real life is that they don't actually help find a person, right? But they will help you if you know, if you have a group of suspects. They can be useful in narrowing down to a type of person who would likely do it. So if there's a guy you think probably did it, a profiler might be able to say, yeah, if they interview him, you know, but sometimes from just looking at him. But if they're interviewing him, a profiler might be able to say, yeah, he's the type of person that might commit this crime, okay?
Yeah.
That's what, this is what I'm giving to profilers. This is what I will say profilers can do in reality. And again, I'm making that pretty huge distinction here. Reality post fiction. In fiction, they tend to just find people, which I've always found peculiar. But what I've noticed recently is, even if they find people, I found in a lot of shows that profilers do almost nothing. Like, because the people who write these shows, like, have you ever watched Cracker? Right? Perhaps the definitive British profiler show.
Yes, I've seen one episode twice.
Fantastic show. He gets a guy, like, he'll usually help them find the guy, and then he gets the guy in a room, and then with no evidence, he will psychologically figure out why the guy did it, and if not get him to confess, get him to commit suicide. Okay? That's what he's good at. Either way, it's a win for the cops. Okay? Suicide, you know, the guy's still out of their hair. But anyway, Robert Carlyle was the killer one time in a really disturbing episode. Yeah, so you might want to check that one out.
Cool.
Anyway, I've noticed that that show was written by a person who had a really firm grasp of psychology.
Yes.
I feel that, like most of the other profiler shows, especially the American ones, the people don't have such a great grasp of psychology. And so they end up writing a show where a guy talks about psychology a lot, but really the way they solve the crime is just finding evidence in normal police show ways. Like, I don't know if you've ever, this is not profiler-based, but have you ever watched the show The Closer?
Yes.
Okay. Here's my problem with the show The Closer. My problem with which, surprise, surprise, I have a problem with the show The Closer. The problem with the show The Closer is, the whole premise of the show, when it was explained to me, and, you know, what it was pitched as was, she's this woman who's, like, the best interrogator in the CIA.
Yeah.
And she will go to people, like, she will get in a room with a terrorist, and she'll be able to get them to tell, you know, the CIA everything they know about their organization, because she's so good, you know, at talking people into doing stuff. And the thing is, she did before she became the deputy chief. That was the whole premise of the show.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Originally, that was her job. So that was the pitch of the character and the pitch of the show. And so I thought this would be very entertaining because that's kind of the premise of Cracker. You know, he doesn't have evidence. He just talks to people and gets inside their head until they confess.
Like but Columbo. Then
a lot like Columbo, but, you know,
he
it's more
intense. He just irritates you into giving up.
The genius thing about Columbo is it's always a mystery that we know the answer to, but the Columbo knows the answer to as well. Because the genius thing about Columbo is the first time he meets every suspect, he instantly knows who did it. And the rest of the thing is just him trying to figure out a way to prove it. But the thing about The Closer that bugged me was it had been pitched as this way, as this thing where they, you know, where a woman goes in a unsolvable crime and they can't break the suspect and then she's going to talk them into confessing and get inside their head, which would be great, okay? But that's not what the show is. Every episode of that show I watch, and I watched the entire first season, whenever she got in the room with a person, she had concrete evidence that they committed a crime. She also gets a confession, but she gets a confession by confronting them with the evidence, not by using psychology or not by being a particularly good interviewer. She's the closer only insofar as she's the woman who goes into the room with the airtight evidence and puts it down in front of someone. If that is the criteria to become a closer, then I could be a closer. Okay? So here is my my project, and wow, have I gotten far from that, is I'm going to watch the show on television right now that's about just serial killer profilers, right? Criminal Minds.
Criminal Minds, yeah.
I'm going to watch every episode of the first season of Criminal Minds, and I'm going to find out, in that episode, if A, profiling was actually used at all to solve the crime. Because it is my theory that most crimes will be solved by conventional police means. Okay?
Okay.
Two, if profiling was used, was it psychologically believable profiling or just, you know, terrible television psychobabble profiling? And C, I don't know if I remember if I was going A, B, C, or 1, 2, 3, so I'm just going to say C. C, if profiling was used, could they just have easily have solved the crime using conventional police methods? Like, would it have been really easy to solve this crime without? Okay? So those are my criteria, and I'm going to examine the show to see whether the show Criminal Minds actually has anything at all to do with Criminal Minds. I'm very excited about this.
I've never seen an episode, so I can't comment.
I watched the episode, first episode of it ever, and I found it so laughably bad that I never went back.
Oh,
and I would tell you why now, but that will spoil the surprise of you hearing me talk about it when I unveil the project on the next AVOD.
Okay.
So, that's my new project. Now, I believe there's a show you wanted to talk about.
Yes. Moving right along.
Yeah.
And this is a show that we've both seen. And we
every
both,
episode of.
Every episode of. We can both can contribute. It's Fringe.
Fringe, yes. J.J. Abrams' new fake X-Files.
Fake X-Files, exactly. That's how I describe it to people. I'm like, well, it's, you know, it's like the X-Files, except kind of not.
Okay.
And most people get it.
Oh, I think so. I mean, it's not that hard of an idea to wrap your head around.
No.
All right, so, Fringe. I'm going to tell you right now my incredibly bigoted response to Fringe.
Okay. Bigoted.
Here's the thing that I hated about Fringe in the first episode that I haven't quite gotten over yet.
Okay.
The fact that instead of just putting a subtitle to show us where the scene is taking place, that 3D letters hover in midair.
I really don't understand why you have such a problem with that.
I don't, neither do I. I can't
like
explain.
That, of all the things.
To complain about the show, and there are a myriad.
Because it actually has nothing to do with the show.
Nothing. No, just
not,
pisses me
not,
off.
Not a thing.
And yet, it just pisses me off. I don't know. I can't even
I
offer a rational
think it's
reason.
It's kind of cool. I like it.
I know, and that's exactly why they do it there. So people like you will think it's kind of cool.
People like me? What
those
does that
like
mean?
You. It was a surprisingly cruel thing for me to say.
Yeah.
With nothing to back it up.
Unwarranted.
Okay, hipsters. Hipsters will find it cool.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
The post-ironic generation of hipster.
Oh, God. God, it just gets worse and worse.
I'm such a prick. Anyway, that is my knee-jerk, initial, totally unscientific, totally, let's face it, invalid reason.
And unreasonable. Unreasonable.
And totally unreasonable thing to judge the show on, reaction to the show. What was your first reaction to the show?
I didn't know what to think.
Okay.
Initially, my first reaction was, this was filmed in Toronto. That was my first reaction.
Is and it then, filmed in Toronto?
Yeah, well, that was the pilot.
Oh, the pilot was. Okay.
I don't know.
They may have actually moved it to Boston.
They might have. I have no idea. I've never been to Boston. But the pilot was shot in Toronto, so that was pretty exciting.
Everybody loves that.
Because, you know, it's nice to
see Toronto. It is. You see it so rarely in film.
I know. It's great. Well...
That's actually the opposite of true, but there you go.
So, now that I've, you know,
watched a couple of episodes.
Watched a few more episodes.
Yeah.
I still, you know what? I have a thing about my mind, if it's any good or not.
That's my main problem with it. Like, it's just like, I don't even know if this is good. I mean, I know events are happening. I know that the show is continuing to be on, but it's like... I feel like I'm lacking the criteria to judge whether it's good or not, because It's also familiar. It feels like something I've watched before, and yeah. I kind of liked it the first time, so I don't really feel good about complaining about it now.
I freaking loved X-Files. Like, I was know, all over that. I know,
we both loved X-Files.
All over that.
Yeah.
And so, because, maybe just because this is so much like it, except it tries to be different because, you know, it's an open conspiracy.
And not only is it an open conspiracy, but Well, I'll talk about the conspiracy in a second, but they might, and I don't know if this is true or not, but they might have an idea where the conspiracy is going, so that would put it head and shoulders above the X-Files right there.
Well, no, because I think, to be fair, when Chris Carter started the X-Files, he had, like, an idea of sort of where he was headed, but then the show just took off,
yeah.
And it ran on for so many seasons that he kind of lost track of where he was going with it.
That is the politest way to describe what he did.
So it's sort of, the show kept going when it maybe should have stopped.
Maybe like 4 seasons before it did.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I feel like they probably have a plan for
things.
Yeah, I think
they're definitely driving towards something. But I have my ideas about what's going on, and I hope that I'm wrong, because they're not very good ideas.
Okay.
Because, like, you know, the woman with the bionic arm, whose name I don't remember, she's, like, so clearly evil.
Well, what I thought was so funny was about, and no one, like, maybe all the characters think this, and I'm the one who missed it, but right in the first episode, they made it clear that every, you know, crazy scientific thing they're going to deal with on the show is something Joshua Jackson's dad invented.
But then they had an episode a couple weeks ago where that wasn't the case.
Which episode was that?
The one with the probe thing that came out of the Earth?
No, he had worked on that.
And then went back into the Earth.
No, he had designed that. That was the underground torpedo he built. Yeah.
No, it isn't.
It is.
He knew about it. He had an idea of what it was.
No, he had worked on it.
He didn't make that thing. And then there's that, like, crazy bald guy who can't taste anything.
Oh, yeah, the weird guy from the future or whatever
Watcher.
It is. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because I like that he's clearly the Watcher from Marvel Comics. I enjoyed that. But anyway, he had worked on that. The one that he had worked less on was the gel that filled up the bus. He hadn't invented that.
Yeah.
He had worked on the underground torpedo.
That was a weird one.
Yeah, that was a weird
one. Because she's got, like, some weird disc in her hand.
Although, what was weird is, he hadn't worked on that, but he had worked on the thing that allowed people to, the crazy guy, to see that was going to happen. So, he's not going to be responsible for every bit of mad science on
the
show, but every episode,
he
will be connected to the mad science in every episode. But the thing that bugged me about the show, and this is why I don't see why people are in the show are so confused, is that basically, every piece of mad science they've come across has had a tangential relation to Joshua Jackson's dad, right?
Yeah.
To Pacey's dad.
I don't know if you can call him that.
Well, what's the character's name? Pacey? Is the character's name Pacey?
No, it's Pacey.
His name be Pacey. For
anyway,
your purposes. All
right. Moving right along.
The thing is, every single, over the past 20 years, oh no, I guess 15 years, every single member of, item of the pattern has had something to do with research he worked on over the previous 30 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for all of that time, there were two guys working in a lab. A crazy guy, and that world's as Bill Gates, / Alexander Graham Bell, / Thomas Edison, right?
Right. Yeah.
Now, basically, in the intervening 15 years, one guy went to a mental institution, and the other guy, the only other guy to have access to all of this information, went on to become the richest man and the richest and most powerful man on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And now mad science all over the world is involved in that, so I'm like, isn't it clear that he's behind it? Like,
shouldn't it
be painfully clear to everyone that Bill Edison is behind it?
Well, see, here's what I think might happen.
Okay.
I don't know if they are, in fact, behind everything that's happening in the pattern.
Oh, and can I say one more thing? Isn't it incredibly convenient how everything that happens with the pattern happens within easy driving distance of Boston?
I know. That is lucky.
That is
lucky. They do mention that there's other stuff happening other places.
I know. It's just a lot of it happens there.
Yeah, but no. Okay, I'm not even going to get into Anyway. I think, like, okay, Massive Dynamic, they're yes. aware of the pattern, and I think they're capitalizing on it, but I don't know if they're in charge of it, so to speak. I don't know if they're behind it.
Okay.
I think they're
I did enjoy the Massive, the fake
the
ad.
Situation.
I enjoyed the fake ad. Did you see the fake ad?
Oh, that was amazing. Yes, I loved it.
Oh, that was so great that
I
they did a fake ad.
I wish they keep doing that.
Why didn't they keep doing that?
I don't know, but oh, they
so
should have been that
fast. For
so
those
good.
Of you who didn't see the show, the evil corporation at the heart of it, Massive Dynamic, there was
ad.
Limited commercials, right, on the show. So during the commercial break, they showed a fake ad for the company that the show was about. It was a really nice touch that
oh,
more shows
it's so
should do.
Good.
And
it's brilliant.
Yeah, I thought that was, that I thought was great.
Yeah.
But overall, like watching the show, I feel like, well, the thing that I'm worried about with the pattern was, in a show that could be just about investigating mad science, I almost feel like they're going to put too much of an explanation on it, and I'm going to compare it to something that you probably didn't see, because I was the only person who watched this.
Okay.
The new The Night Stalker.
You're right, I never saw it.
Nobody saw it. That's
I
not
haven't seen the old
the
Night
point.
Stalker.
You make me sick.
I know.
Anyway.
It's appalling.
It is sad. All right, so the new Night Stalker, the problem was the original Night Stalker was about this guy who kept on finding spooky mysteries. It's what the X-Files was based on, loosely. Right? He kept on finding out about spooky mysteries, always within suspiciously close driving distance of where he lived in Chicago. Or was it Los Angeles? Now I'm forgetting where the character lived in a show I loved, so... No, it was definitely Los Angeles. It was definitely Los Angeles. It had to be because, well, the problem is it might have been Chicago, but
we
it sure as hell wasn't shot in Chicago.
Just keep talking.
All right. Anyway, the new Night Stalker, they're like, instead of just being a guy who investigates spooky mysteries, how about he's a guy whose wife was mysteriously murdered by monsters, and he's trying to find out who killed his wife? And so... Basically, the premise as set up in the opening of the first episode was, and it was just the bleakest, most depressing show you'd ever want to watch, and which is why no one would ever want to watch it. But anyway, in the first episode, they established that there was a symbol carved into certain people's hands when they had been the victim of, like, poltergeists or ghost suicide or mysterious drowning, like drowning in the middle of a city street, or like his wife killed by werewolves, which, and I'm like,
what?
So what you're saying is all of the monsters of the world have gotten together to form a conspiracy? And in a way, that's what the pattern like feels like to me, that it's like all the if they were just, you know, this is the team of the FBI fighting mad science, which is a problem these days, I guess. You know, there's a lot of mad science out there. It's a problem, so we created an FBI division to find it, to fight it, and this guy is the best guy most qualified to deal with mad science because he's a reformed mad scientist, and Pacey is there because it's his son. Right? So had all of that been there, I would have been great, but I feel like... And then every now and then, they could have done an overarching plot episode. But the way every episode so far has made it about the pattern, it makes me worry that it's going to be another monster conspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, that one episode with, like, that weird gel on the bus, that
yeah.
was... It was meant, like, it sort of fit into the pattern because it's this weird...
Because they were
bus.
Using... No, not just that, but because they were using the ghost net, in addition to filling up a bus full of gel...
Yeah, they
all
use
of
that
the,
weird... They use the ghost net to communicate.
All
but
of the guys
the
in this
the,
criminal organization were
the
using...
At the end of the episode, where they take
a
that,
psychic way of communicating.
That disc out of her hand,
yeah.
And then you see, like, you know, I guess... what's supposed to be a new copy of John,
yeah.
And they're uploading something from his brain onto a computer. Like, that stuff, though, that's not pattern. That's Massive Dynamics, hidden agenda, whatever it is. So that's what makes me think that they're just capitalizing on the pattern to do their own weird science.
Whereas I'm of the mind that they're behind the pattern. So we've obviously got two different things. And I mean, yeah, it's been picked up for a full season, and we're both going to keep watching it. So I'm sure we'll come back to this as the show runs. So the final verdict on this show, Fringe, is we really don't know if it's good or bad yet.
We don't know if we like it or not. Like, we're going to keep watching it.
And isn't that all they can ask, really?
Yeah, it's really the best they can hope for. The people just keep watching.
That we continue watching. And it's odd, because usually we know right away if we hate something or love it, most of the time hate it.
You make it seem like we're so full of hate and spite and piss and vinegar. And
so explain
it's really
to
not
me
true at all.
In which way that's not true.
Hey, I am not that hateful and spiteful. Oh,
sorry, I am the hateful one.
Yes.
Actually, I wish I could deny that's completely true. I am completely the hateful one. And speaking of things I hate, let's address another show. A show that I don't know if you're watching or not, but if
probably
you're
not,
I'm going to do a quick rant, and if you are, please feel free to discuss.
Okay.
That show is a little show called Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Oh, I saw the trailer? What am
the
I talking
pilot?
About? I saw the pilot.
And you haven't really watched it since?
No, I thought the pilot was amazing, though. I loved it.
Okay.
But then I heard that it wasn't any good, so I didn't bother.
Oh, it's terrible. And yet I totally keep watching it because I'm crazy. But I'll tell you, the pilot, yeah, you know what, I'm such an ass, I even had a few problems with the pilot, but let's not get into that today. That's not what today's about. I'm not going to go back and bitch about the pilot again. What I'm going to say is, I even wrote two blog posts about this. I was trying forever to figure out what I hated so much about it. Like, what is so wrong about this show that conceptually is a mistake? Like, I think even a conceptual level, the show is a disaster. And after really looking at it hard, I think I figured out what it is. Okay? Do you know what the problem with the show is?
No.
Okay. That, you know, after John Connor has kind of grown up, why are you making a show about his mom? Like, why are you...
It's
called The Sarah Connor Chronicles, right?
Isn't the show sort of meant to be about how she trains him to become the leader?
Yeah, except he's already 16 and pretty much fully, like, trained in all the military stuff. So now it should be about how he comes into his own as a leader of people and begins becoming the John Connor that we're going to know in the future, which, while at the same time trying to stop and maybe succeeding in stopping Skynet, okay? Mm-hmm. Which, hey, would be a nice twist if he actually stopped Skynet after the disaster that was Terminator 3. And if you haven't seen Terminator 3, never see Terminator 3.
Okay.
Live in a world, like I said to people about Indiana Jones, live in a world where there are only good Terminator movies. Because that's what I tell to everybody who hasn't seen Crystal Skull yet. Don't you want to live in the world where there are only good Indiana Jones movies? Isn't that a beautiful place to live?
Aww.
I know. I make it so heartfelt. But anyway, the point I'm getting at with Terminator is, and this is going to, it's going to seem like a reach, what I'm about to say, but I want to say in advance.
Nothing else you said already is
a reach at all. Okay, it's going to sound like a reach, but I swear to you, what I'm about to tell you isn't a reach at all. And I'm going to compare this to something. And I don't know why I hadn't compared it really before, but making a show about Sarah Connor when the character of John Connor is already 15 is utterly pointless. And it's utterly pointless like something else. Right? After John Connor's out there and leading people and fighting Terminators on his own and starting to learn how to be a man, nobody cares about Sarah Connor anymore. Just like, once Jesus is out there making speeches, nobody cares about Mary anymore. Like, she's a fascinating character, and she's the center of the story until Jesus actually starts going out there and making speeches. Right? Until Jesus comes into his own and becomes a religious leader, Mary's an interesting character. But once he does that, nobody really cares about Mary anymore, and it's the exact same thing with Sarah Connor. Like, once John is actually fighting Terminators, who cares what his mom is up to? Like, she's gotten him to the point where he's ready to fight Terminators. Job's done. Let's watch the show about the guy who's going to save the future, Not the show about the guy who's going to save the future's mom.
Okay.
Is that a stretch? And, okay.
Well, see,
and
the thing
don't,
is...
Yeah? And Sarah, don't you dare tell me the Jesus thing is a reach.
I don't really know that much about Jesus.
Well, I'm
going to...
Can I... Allow me to tell you something. Okay? So, John Connor, right, is a man whose initials are J.C.
Yeah, I get it.
Was, his mother was impregnated in a miracle birth by a man who didn't exist yet.
I knew this is where you were going.
She bore her child alone so that one day he will grow up to save the human, become the savior of the human race. I didn't do the Jesus stuff. James Cameron did the Jesus stuff.
So
okay?
You're saying John Connor is Jesus.
I'm saying, no, I'm not saying he is literally Jesus. I'm saying he's a Jesus figure. I'm saying, no, because they succeeded in killing Jesus, and Jesus actually, you know, they succeeded in killing Jesus, whereas John Connor totally defeats the Terminators. Anyway, I'm not saying there's a one-to-one analog. I'm saying the John Connor story uses the Jesus story as its basis. And if you think that there's no basis for this, I'm going to blow your mind. Are you ready to have your mind blown?
I'm ready.
Okay. So, remember how I just made that really obnoxious speech about how no one cares about Mary after Jesus has gone out and started making speeches?
I remember.
Okay. Back in, like, 1998, a TV movie actually tried to tell the story of Mary while Jesus was grown up and out making speeches. That happened. That is a real thing that really exists.
Okay.
It was terrible. They didn't think it through. Nobody cared. It didn't get great ratings. But would you like to know who played Jesus in that movie?
Sure.
Christian Bale.
Really?
And who's playing John Connor in the new Terminator movie?
Christian Bale?
Exactly. I think I've just proven my point.
You haven't proven anything.
Oh, come on. What could be more compelling than the double casting of Bale? You can't come up with an argument against that. Try.
Yeah, but then by that logic, Batman is also Jesus. And every other character Christian Bale's ever played...
No.
...is Jesus.
No, I'm just saying that an extremely Jesus-y character that already existed is now being played by a guy... who got one of his earliest, you know, breaks in American mindset after, of course, Little Women, which he was the star of. Well, the male star of. He was the guy in Little Women.
She clarified that.
Well, I'm just saying, he was not one of the Little Women. But anyway, that he was the star of, right? One of his first big exposures to America, you know, as an adult, because he had been a famous child star, obviously.
How many
was
movie
playing Jesus.
TV characters are based on Jesus?
Not that many.
Lots. Okay.
Okay, enough.
Lots
There's a
of
few.
Them.
Okay. I'll give you that. There are a few characters who are based on Jesus. It's not that unusual thing. I'm just saying that it's an apropos comparison between John Connor and Jesus because it was so clearly intentionally made. And I think my point that once Jesus starts making speeches, you don't care about Mary, thus translates over to once John Connor starts fighting Terminators, whether it's in the present or in the future, you don't care about his mom. I think that's true as well. And I think
did you come to this conclusion based on the fact that Christian Bale's playing John Connor in the
movie,
and he was in that TV movie about Mary?
I came to that conclusion the central premise of the show, that anyone would care about a show about Sarah Connor after, you know, John's doing things, was a bad idea, and only after that did I notice the Jesus-Mary comparison, and only after that did I notice that Christian Bale had played Jesus in the stupid movie where they had tried to make a movie about Mary after Jesus was out kicking ass. So no, it happened in exactly the way I've told the story. Okay? Well, it was good for a laugh, if nothing else.
If nothing else.
It may have been nothing else. Okay. So, I think that's all the topics we're supposed to cover today.
Yes.
So, what we're going to do is, I guess we'll wrap up the AVOD for tonight.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for watching.
Thank you for watching the AVOD. And,
always a pleasure.
As always, if you have any questions or comments of us, you can reach us at vardulon@gmail.com. That's V-A-R-D-U-L-O-N.
You can't even spell your own name.
That's so sad.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and
such a fraud.
I guess check out the blogs.
Oh, absolutely. Check out the blogs. It's at Vardulon. You go first.
Z-O-M-B-O-T-S. blogspot.com. The other one's Vamborgs, vamborgs.blogspot.com.
And as always, you can find Castle Vardulon at the address vardulon.blogspot.com, which, out of common decency, I will not spell this time.
Thank you.
Yeah, but you can reach us at vardulon@gmail, check out the blogs, and we will see you next time here at the AVOD.